This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's September 18th, 2019. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Do you really think I'm friendly?
Really? You're gonna pull that right now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's lovely. Yes, you are. You're very friendly.
All right.
Anyway, this is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar, and occasional marital bliss. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening live, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes, and I'm finally up to date on all those. Ron's rant of the week. Okay, Ron's rant is, this came out in discussion because we were down in Virginia and hanging out with a bunch of like-minded bicycle people, and we were talking about different things, and this just popped up in the middle of a conversation, and I said, you know what, that's going to be this week's rant. So, what's your excuse? Accountability, okay? Why can't you ride your bike and give yourself an hour of your health? You know, this is something that you might want to look at. Or how about commuting to work on your bike? Here we go. What's your excuse? Think about it. Isn't 1 hour of your day worth it for you? So that's my rant. That's what it is. It's not real heavy, not real deep. It's just something to think about.
Actually,
what do you think?
Actually, it is.
It is heavy and it is deep. Yeah. Well, you can always comment on Facebook. I actually put it up already for comment, and I haven't looked at my Facebook page to see if anyone has jumped all over me about it yet, but that does happen upon occasion.
So here's the thing.
Fran will jump all over me about it.
I am going to. You know that I'm a professional, try to get you to do good things to help your life, help you have a better life. That's what I do for a living, right?
I do know that.
Yeah. And you know that one of the things I do is I ask every single patient, what do you do for exercise? Mm-hmm. And when they tell me nothing or I'm not consistent, I try to talk to them about ways to become more consistent. And I think I've heard every single excuse. But,
well, yeah.
But, you know, one of the things that I find disturbing is obviously what's the best exercise that each person should do?
The one that they can do.
Right. The one they'll do. Exactly. Right. So one of the things I try to do is be respectful of the person who's in front of me and say, what do you like to do?
Mm-hmm.
And you know how many people look at me and they say, I don't like to do any of it. I don't want to exercise. I get a lot of that.
Yeah,
they feel like it's something.
I suppose.
They find that they feel like it's something else they have to do. And that harks back to when people didn't do something else to exercise because life was exercise. They worked in the fields. They washed the laundry. And by washing the laundry, I don't mean putting it in the washing machine. I mean, you know, washing it in the brook. People's everyday lives were physically active. Now mm-hmm. they're not anymore. And yet people are still excessively busy. And the thing that I find is you want an excuse. How about kids in a commute?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Trying to get the kids from here to there, trying to get – when you have kids, you're probably driving them somewhere. You're probably driving them to some sort of activity, or you're attending the activity. You're getting them off to school. If you have little kids – I mean, I try to figure out the individual situations, and there are some people who have that situation and they still figure it out because exercise is so important to them that they'll tag team – with their spouse or partner in terms of looking after the kids while the other one exercises. Or they find ways to incorporate the kids in the exercise. For example, ride your bike with the kids. If the kid is too small to ride a bike, you tow the kids. If the kid is big enough to ride a bike, you figure out ways to have the kid ride a bike. People don't have excuses, but they have the reality of ridiculously busy lives. I mean, you and I...
They do.
When you were with Kathy, you guys figured it out, didn't you?
We did.
How did you figure it out?
Well, I owned a bicycle shop, for starters. So by owning a bicycle shop, I was aware of. I'm not going to say just because I owned the bike shop, I could get things for, you know, myself at a lesser price. But I was aware of all the cool things you could get for kids, that you could enhance your cycling experience and actually running experience too, because I was running a lot when Greg was born. So I got one of those baby joggers, which were the very first ones that first came out. No one else had them but this one company. And then I also had a trailer that I pulled behind my bike, which Greg would get inside of. And I'd put him in there, and we would put Big Bear in there with him. Big Bear was a large stuffed bear that was bigger than he was, and that bear would ride in the right next to him. And Greg would get back there, and he couldn't even read yet, but he had books that, you know, the ones that they eat when they're that age. he would have a book, and he would just be, I would just hear him rambling away back there. He was reading to Big Bear, and I would ask him, "What are you doing?" And reading to Big Bear, and that's what he was doing. So he used to read to Big Bear when we were when I was pulling him down the road.
I'm going to tell him you told me that next time I see him.
Oh yeah, you can tell him. Well, he'll be out very soon.
That is so cute.
Yeah, he used to read to Big Bear. It was very funny.
Yeah.
And then Kathy and I would take turns pulling him, and we would go out for a ride, and we would ride to a playscape or whatever, you know, some place where he could get out and let him run around for a while and do his thing, and then plop him back in the trailer and ride back home. And one of us would pull him out, and the other one would pull him back.
So that's like, so you could do something like that on a day when you have some unstructured time.
Correct.
What about the days when, what about your busy work days? How did you exercise then?
So, funny you should ask that question. So there was an event that I used to do from the bicycle shop every Wednesday evening. It was called a time trial. And it was, you know, the little race against the clock local time trial. And I get a bunch of people to show up to it. And I ran it at 6:30 in the evening on Wednesday evenings. And I would, Kathy would come down to the bike shop and pack Greg into the trailer and have it all hooked up onto my bike and ready to go. And then as soon as I closed the door, I would hop on my bike and I would ride out to the time trial, and Greg would be all packed in and ready to go. So I rode out there, and then Greg would hang out with me either running around, because it was out at the Scotland Green and it was a pretty safe place, or sometimes I'd bring a backpack also, because you can put all sorts of things in the trailer. Put him on my back, and I'd keep him up there, and he would conk out within minutes usually, but then I would ride home afterwards. So my Wednesday workout was intense, because I had to ride out to Scotland and back, and you know that's not an easy ride because it's east west, and so you're going over big hills. So you just do it. That's all.
Yeah.
And you know, big shout out to my friends Todd and Sue Holland, who we saw last weekend at the Gravel Grinder, because they did the same thing.
Yeah.
They used to pull, they had a Burley trailer just like I had, and actually they got it from me, and they pulled, I think, Alex everywhere in that trailer. And that's what you do, you know. I'll tell you one thing, you get really fit when you start pulling a trailer around, because it's not easy.
But that's something you did on Wednesday night, and you were off on Wednesday night, and you're able to do that. What about people who have long work days?
Mm-hmm.
You know, didn't you have any days where you have long work days and you had to whim the exercise in wherever you could?
See, I rode my bike to work.
Yeah.
And then I rode my bike home.
Yeah.
And if, depending on our situation as to, you know, child duty, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Many times I would just take the long way home. So I would go home kind of the long way, and because I only lived 5 miles away from where I worked, so it wasn't very far.
It becomes really challenging when you have parents who have long work days and have to get various kids in various places and have to get them to their activities, but also have a commute. And yet it's not impossible. It's not impossible.
It's not impossible, but it does require a higher level of focus.
And planning, right.
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 Well, anyway, if you want to comment about it, it's on Facebook right now.
Yeah, what I would be curious to hear, is there anybody out there who has the situation that I have, that I've spoken of, that you both have demanding jobs, or you have demanding things that you have to do, mm-hmm. and you have a number of kids that you have to schlep places. And you also, you guys also have commutes. You have to get yourselves to work. How do you and yet you're also exercising. How do you handle that? Is there a good solution? Because I hear all the time, I have people all the time come into my practice who are just like, I don't know where to fit it.
Yeah.
That's what they say. How do you fit it in?
Well, you know, I'll, Carrie Jenkins. Shout out to Carrie Jenkins. Hey, by the way, Carrie, if you're listening, thank you so much for teaching my cycling class on Monday while I was away, because she did a great job. Everybody loved her. She did really good. So big shout out to Carrie. She comes in really early in the morning to my 5:45 a.m. class. She leaves right when I'm done and races home to get the kids, because she's got kids off to school. She's got two kids. That's how she does it. You know, so she makes the time, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And again, that's it. That's and somebody's calling us, and they're either going to yell at us or they're going to be making some positive comments. But, you know, that's what you got to do. You got to just kind of fit it in. It's not easy, and it's certainly not for everyone. I do get that. But, you know, we were just, like I said, I was hanging around with a bunch of like-minded cycling people, and we were having this conversation. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to bring that up on the Bicycle Talk show this week. On a positive side, and I kind of like to wait for Fran to come off the phone on this one, because this is a cool thing. So Fran and I went to the Farm to Fork Fondo in Virginia, and it was down in the Shenandoah Valley this time. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's in the Shenandoah Valley. It was beautiful. We had great weather. And is there something I should be paying attention to?
Oh, it's just the gentleman called and said a big shout out to us, and that when he was with his wife, that they found balance.
They found balance.
Yes.
Oh, good. Well, thank you. Thank you for calling in. We do appreciate that. Hey, someone listens to us.
Yes.
Yay. So anyway, so we went down and we stayed with friends that we made last year, Kevin and Alice. And Kevin and Alice have a bed and breakfast, an Airbnb, basically, is what they're running. But they don't call it that. They call it the bike in bed, because they're cyclists. They're cycling people. So they have a place called the Hopewell House Bike in Bed. And I tagged it on Facebook. So it is on my Facebook page for Bicycle Talk, if you want to check it out and see what it is. I'm going to make a little mention of it, because I think it's important. We love them, and they were just unbelievably great hosts. And it was great. So they call it the Hopewell House Bed and Bike. It has three lovely rooms, and it has a queen bed and room to read or rest after a long ride. The room has private baths just outside the bedrooms. It was built in 1905, but upgraded with central air back and beautiful hardwood floors. It's a perfect place to get a night's sleep following a long ride. So Kevin took us for a ride on Saturday morning before we went down to do our registration dance that we do for the Farm to Fork. And it was gorgeous. It was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it's really pretty there.
Rolling hills, really pretty. There were longer flat sections than we have here back home. But it was just so beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful, because you're actually in the Shenandoah Valley, so you're nestled between the mountains.
Yes, the Blue Ridges, the Alleghenies, and something else.
I'm not sure.
But Kevin, and the thing was, Kevin told us all this stuff as we're going.
We knew all the way. And Kevin, he was like a tour guide. He was a history guide, and he brought us by a couple of battlefields that were famous from the Civil War and talked about that. And I'm going to tell you, if you're ever heading in that direction, go to our Facebook page or contact me in some way, and I will point you in the direction of Kevin and Alice, because they're lovely, lovely hosts.
Yes, it was in Strasburg, Virginia.
In Strasburg, Virginia,
which is a tiny little town.
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
And it's a cool little town. You can walk to almost everything.
Right,
which is really cool. And it's really great. So big shout out to Kevin and Alice. We love you guys. You did us well. It was really, really fun. And we can't wait to get back there again next year. While we were down there, We also got to hang out with some friends of ours, Chris and Sam, and they are bicycle mechanics, and they work with the Farm to Fork Fondo as well as another bicycle touring company. And they're a husband and wife duo that are very, very nice people.
Yes.
They live up in Burlington, Vermont. And so Chris was working on Kevin's bike because Kevin's bike was doing weird things. And I said it needed some love. So we broke out after checking a few things. One of the things he did, which is something that I just did to your bike, friend, we were just talking about that, is he pulled out the derailleur alignment tool, the hanger alignment tool, and he found that it was way out. And a lot of Kevin's problems that he was having on his bike was coming from a misaligned derailleur hanger.
Uh-huh.
So shout to Park Tool Company. They make a tool called the DAG-2.2. It's a derailleur hanger alignment gauge. If you go onto the Facebook page, you'll see a short video on there produced by Park Tool, and they'll show you exactly how to use it. I think this is an essential tool. If you work on your own bicycles, this is something you really, really need to have in your toolbox. If you look at this tool and you look at the video and go, I don't know, your local friendly neighborhood bike shop is always the best place to go. Because, yes, you do have to know what you're doing, and sure, you can mess it up if you don't get it right. So you might want to check that out. It's check out the derailleur hanger alignment gauge from Park Tool Company. It's really cool tool. It's a must-have for anyone who wants to work on their own bicycles.
Is this the maintenance minute?
It's the maintenance minute.
Oh, okay.
That's what it is.
Did you say that?
I did.
Oh, all right.
I did. This is the maintenance minute. Yep. So anyway, that's my maintenance minute for today. We're going to move on to a few more things, and I will, the big one though, the one that I feel I have to attack right away here is the Vuelta a España 2019. It's over. Cry, cry. Sad, sad, sad day. All we have to look forward to now is the World Championships, which is on the 23rd of this month, I believe, which should put it into this weekend. So we do have the Worlds coming up. There's going to be the World Time Trial. It's going to be the World Road Race. So we're going to have some things coming on here really, really soon. But that's just a one-day event. And the Vuelta, of course, was 22 days. So it's a different story. There was a very, very strong feeling that it would be swept by South America, that the Colombians were going to take all three, until, of course, it didn't happen. So instead, it became the ownership of Primo Roglic, who rides for Jumbo Visma, and he was outstanding, absolutely outstanding. He had a great race. He ended up in winning the race. This is going to hurt. 83 hours and 7 minutes and 31 seconds. He was followed very closely by the Spanish star, Alejandro Valverde, 2 minutes and 16 seconds behind. Isn't it amazing that you could race your bike for 22 days and only lose by 2 minutes? That's like really crazy. To me, that's crazy. Here's the big one, though. Tadej Pogačar from Slovenia, another Slovenian. There's two Slovenians, okay? So we got Primo and Tadej. They're both from Slovenia. He was 2 minutes and 38 seconds behind. So second and third place was separated by 20 seconds. 22 seconds. That's it. That's amazing. And then in fourth place, it was Nairo Quintana, and he was 3 minutes and 29 seconds behind the leader. And in fifth place, Miguel Angel Lopez from Colombia, 4 minutes and 31 seconds. So the two Colombians that looked like they might be something to be watching out for are they were fourth and fifth, and not happening this year. So, Anyway.
Boy, Alejandro Valverde, my goodness, he has been...
He's been around for a while.
I know.
Yeah, yeah, he
is. Is he 40 already?
No, is he?
I don't know.
Look him up. Look him up. He's up there. I mean, well, maybe not. He might not be up there.
I feel like I've been hearing about Alejandro Valverde, like, forever.
That name has been around for a long time. He's a Spanish rider. He rides for Movistar, as well as Nairo Quintana, who also rides for Movistar. And actually, Movistar had not one, not two, but three riders in the top 10. So I believe that put them.
He's almost 40.
He's almost 40.
He's 39 years old.
Yeah, he's been at it for a while.
And guess when his birthday is?
I wouldn't know.
April 25th.
Hey, it's the day before my birthday.
Yeah, he's Taurus.
How cool is that?
He's stubborn.
Yeah, well, we are.
Yeah.
I'll cop to that. Yeah. I'll definitely cop to that. So anyway, that's your Vuelta. I mean, things happened. You know, there were certainly some changes. Simon Yates wasn't there this year. We had a few other riders that ended up crashing out or pulling out. So we had some definite things going on there. But it was a really exciting race, and it was great if you could figure out a way to watch it. And I would watch it. I would actually watch it through the GCN videos primarily because they were really good. They had a follow-up every single day on the race, which was really cool. Big shout-out to the Global Cycling Network. Love those guys. If you are listening to this podcast and you have not yet discovered the Global Cycling Network, you need to go to YouTube and check it out. They are they're funny, and they're really informative, and you will if you don't learn a lot, you'll laugh a lot when you're listening to them because they're great. They really are. Fran actually put them on the car as we were driving down to Virginia. We had them on for a little while because they had some informative videos about various things, training ideas and other things. So, and about I think they didn't they have the one about the food intake.
How to not lose weight.
How to not lose weight.
Yeah.
So this cyclist that they were talking to put down, 4,200 calories for something
in a day?
Like that, in a day?
He burned 43. He wound up burning 4,300 in the day, but he also ate that much.
But he also ate as much as he burned.
Yeah.
So watch what you eat, folks.
And if you want to lose fat, there's no way around it. Fat loss happens in a setting of caloric restriction and hormonal balance. And, you know, you can out-eat your workout, and there's nothing, and you can't.
And many do. Many do.
And
especially
you can't out-exercise a bad diet.
Right. And many cyclists do. I think more so cyclists than, like when I was running, I don't know if I could out-eat my exercise with the running, only because, you know, running is so
concentrated.
It's so hard on your body.
Yes.
That you lose your appetite.
Yeah.
Whereas cycling, you're looking for anything that moves on the side of the road, and you want to eat it.
Right.
You know, you can't. One of my biggest things that would happen to me when I was out riding my bike is I would ride by someone's barbecue, and all I wanted to do was pull over and make friends. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, boy, that smells good, because you're just hungry. You're constantly hungry when you're
I really wonder if we should just do that sometime and see what happens.
I think it would be really funny to do.
If you were very gracious and polite and said, hey, hi, we're on a long ride.
God, does your yard smell good?
Or just ask for water and they'll say, grab a plate.
Yeah. Hey, would you like this? Would you like that? We got lots of food.
Because that's what I mean, we would do that in a
second. We would totally do it in a second. There's no
question. If people came by our house and they were on their bikes and they were clearly on a long ride and they're like, do you mind if we use your bathroom and get some water? We'd be like, we're having a barbecue. Join us.
Right. Exactly. Oh, yeah. We would totally do that. There's no question.
And, of course, I'd run upstairs and get all the spare goos and chews.
Yeah, we'd fill them
bars
up. Fill them
stuff.
Up. Get them going. Yep. Right.
Yep.
Cool. Very cool. So, the Vuelta. That was fun. It was really, really a lot of fun. I enjoyed watching it. The climbs were at a level of ridiculous this year that was, I don't know what to say. The climbs were crazy in the Vuelta this year. Nasty, ugly, climbs. Just really, really difficult. I'm amazed that they can do what they do. But I just blasted out one of my pages here. I didn't mean to do that. But anyway, the next thing that is on my list is I want to talk a little bit about women's cycling. There's a woman by the name of Kate Courtney, and she is a mountain bike racer. And she, let's see if I can open this in another link here. So anyway, Kate is, she's a cyclist. She is a professional, and she graduated from Stanford University in 2017. She began racing full-time in her first season in 2017, and she won not one, not two, not three, but four U23 World Cups. And the U23 World Cup title overall. Took a silver medal in the U23 World Championships. She's also a two-time U.S. cross-country national champion, having won the 2017 and 2018. Courtney participated in the 2018 UCI Mountain Bike World Championships, winning the gold medal in the women's elite cross-country race. It was the first such win for an American since 2001. So anyway, she's kind of a big deal, wouldn't you say? Sounds like a big deal to me. Well, Kate's got, she's becoming a lot more outspoken. And the title of the article I have here in front of me is How Kate Courtney Wants to Empower the Next Generation of Female Riders. The quote is, "You can be feminine and girly and sparkly and be a really badass bike racer as well." So anyway,
I've taken to wearing like a little bit of bling on my wrist on long bike rides. Just a little bracelet.
You know, I doing these farm to fork fondos, you see people all the time that are, you know, all dolled up and dressed up, and they're riding, you know, 85 miles on their bikes,
yeah.
And they're coming in pretty strong, and you know, they're hanging with a bunch of other riders who are also moving it out, and yeah, there's nothing wrong with being a girl on your bike if you want to be a girl, or being a boy on your bike if you want to be a boy. What's the big deal, right?
Yes.
So anyway,
we're wearing a tutu,
or you could wear a tutu,
or wear bling, wear pink, wear lavender.
Who used to do that anyway. But you know, it's just anyway. She has moved on to a partnering with a jewelry company that makes a charity band for others to enjoy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So she has something called the Sparkle, quote-unquote, bracelet that Courtney designed, and part of the funds will be donated to Little Bellas, a nonprofit organization that focuses on mentoring and empowering young women through cycling. Yay, Kate. Hey, I think we need to give Kate a call. What do you think? Okay. Think she'll talk to us? It would be a cool thing because she's doing something very, very cool and very positive for cycling. You've heard me often speak of this in the past on other bicycle talks about, you know, giving back to the sport that you love. Well, here you go. And this is a young girl doing this. I give her a big, big tip of the Pedal and Run cycling cap for this one. So anyway, I happened to notice this, and I read about it, and I thought, you know, I really, 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 you need to shout out to folks like this. So Little Bellas was co-founded by Lee Davidson through the Specialized Professional Team. And Courtney became an ambassador for the organization. She often participates as a mentor to the girls in her local Marin, California chapter, where she joins group rides and sessions that teach skills to encourage young riders. So anyway, very, very big shout out. I think it's really cool. This woman, she's a young woman. She's quite good at what she does. And she has decided that it's important to get other young women involved in cycling and encourage them. So pretty cool stuff. Just thought I would pass that on because I think it's great. There's one other thing I want to bring into the discussion here today as far as women's cycling goes. You're going to like this one, Fran. Hey, did you know that there's a new law in California that requires equal prize money for women's cycling in California?
Wow.
Yeah.
I do like that.
While the equal pay for equal play law is a step in the right direction, it still falls short in a few areas. But, hey, it's a start. So that's happening right now. That's pretty cool. And I know that there are women friends of mine out there that are professional cyclists and others that are very happy to see this. It just got a little bit more equal in California, and the new bill was signed into law on Monday, and it requires sports competitions held on public yes. lands in the state to offer equal prize money for men and women. I do that at my cross race, so, and I have been doing that for a while, and sometimes I get some criticism for it, but you know what? I don't care. But I agree. I think it's a good way to encourage people, and both men and women, to do what they do. So anyway, if you are a race promoter, it's definitely something you want to look at. It obviously, you know, California, as we know, they start the trends, and then the rest of the world kind of follows them. So I thought it was kind of a cool thing to see that we were having this happening in cycling. I know there's a tremendous amount of talk about this in the women's WNBA right now. There's always been talk about this. Yes. So anyway, I thought I would bring it up because I thought it was worthy of talking about. And
yes,
and so the law ensures equal prize money. It falls short, actually, in requiring equal participation. An event organizer still can avoid offering equal prize money by not holding a women's event in the first place. In fact, the original battle over the Mavericks Invitational, which was an event out there, was not about prize money, but about ensuring that women had the opportunity to compete. So, in a speech before the California Assembly in April, they urged an expansion of AB 467 to address the aspect of gender equity in sports. Equal pay is only part of the problem. Increasing the number of events and awards for women, as well as offering equal prize money, is the only way to achieve meaningful equity in competitive sports. So I think we got a caller, and I don't know if that's something we need to talk about. I guess not. Okay. If you have anything you want to talk about on or say about this, you can always join in on the Facebook page and make a comment there. I think this is something we definitely need to look at. I also want to bring out one other thing too. Last week, I actually ended up stopping by the tail end of the Rocky Hill Cyclocross Series over in Rocky Hill, Connecticut, and it's a training race that happens on Wednesday nights. Big shout out. They're going on again tonight, so if you want to try out cross, this is a good way to do it. I'm going to also spend a little bit more time this week talking about cyclocross and talking about how to train for it, what to expect, that sort of thing. So anyway, we will move on to that. But as I go there, I'm talking to Jed Kornbluh from Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program, who we have had on our show. Big shout out for him, and he'll be back real soon too. He has some more things he wants to come back and talk about, so he'll be back real soon. So we'll get another great conversation with Jed, I'm sure. He has 90 kids signed up for cyclocross this fall through the Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program. 90. I used to not get 9 to show up to a cross race. As a matter of fact, I used to get not even half of that to show up to a cross race in the junior category. Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program, the leader in the nation, no question about it. Take a look at the numbers. We are really kicking some serious butt out here. And boy, I love seeing it. I love seeing the parents involved. It's such a wonderful thing. And a great way to get your child involved in bicycle racing is to bring them to a cyclocross race. And the reason I say that, actually, mountain bike races are very good too, but the cyclocross races are not very long. So you're not throwing them into a, okay, you're going to do this race and you're going to go out there and you're going to sit on a bike and suffer for 2 hours type of affair. They're going to go out and they're going to ride from anywhere from 30 to 40 minutes max. And that's what the race is going to be. And if they get lapped, it doesn't matter. Everyone still pats them on the back and encourages them. The fact is they're in the mix. They're actually doing it. They're spending the time out there. They're meeting other kids that like to ride their bicycles too. What a cool thing. And let me cap that off with, and they're also learning how to ride their bikes, because if you're riding your bike off-road, it's an entirely different game than riding your bike on the road. So they really obtain a tremendous amount of skills, too. Kids on bikes, I can't say enough about it. I saw a lot of kids on bikes this weekend at the Farm to Fork Fondo. We had a bunch. We had families coming for the Ramble Ride, which is really cool. The Ramble Ride is a 9-mile journey for the kids, and they ride out to a farm, and they get some food, and then they ride back. One of our...
And they get some more food.
And then they get some more food. Yeah, well, that's one thing about the Renegade Sports puts on a great event. And I
and
hear
you gain
it,
weight on
I
the ride.
I hear it all day long. Every time I go and announce one of those events, I hear it. People just, they can't believe how well done it is and what a great job they do. So big shout out to Jim and Tyler and JT and the whole crew for everything that they do for
I'm
the sport.
I'm gonna miss them.
I know you. Well, I've got one more to go, but you're done right now.
I'm done till next year.
Yeah, I know. And then there's Scott and there's Sarah and there's
Alec and Hayes and Susie.
So anyway,
and Sarah.
Yeah,
you said Sarah.
I said Sarah. So there's all sorts of cool people that are involved with the organization. It really is like a family, and it's really put on at a level that exceeds other events that you'll see out there. So really cool thing. I got a little off track because I'm really passionate about the Farm to Fork Fondo. It's a great event.
It's great fun.
It is fun.
And my buds are there.
Fran's giving me a pouty face and a pouty voice right now.
Not going to see Hayes and Alec. They're my buddies. I can't give the rest of my finisher brew to Tyler. And Kevin and Alice are friends.
I know. Well, you know what? They'll be there next year, too. Mm. You know, we'll do this again.
I think we should go to Virginia before next year.
Okay. You drive this time.
Okay.
Oh, gosh. So anyway, let's talk a little bit about cyclocross. I've already talked about the fact that I think it's a great thing to get people involved in it. So how do I do this? How do I get into cross? What is it that I need to learn? What is it that I need to practice? Whatever it may be. It's all good stuff. I've got two different lists here and this would be, okay. So we have, by the way, if you are really into cyclocross or you want to know more about cyclocross, I highly recommend a site. It is cxmagazine.com. It's Cyclocross Magazine Online. And it will give you lots of tips and information. There's also, there is a results page, I think that's tied into that too, that you can check out. If not there, through bikereg.com. But let's take a look at what do you do to get yourself involved in this. First thing and foremost, attend a clinic. And try a clinic. And going to a cyclocross clinic, often they will be offered July, August, and into September, which you will also find them at the Rocky Hill race. And get some people to show you how to do this, how to get on and off your bike, how to deal with the terrain that you're riding on up ahead. Clinics are offered as training camps. Also, there are definitely some training camps out there that are a few days long and offer things like lactate threshold testing. Others are just a few hours and go over the basics. Well worth the time and effort. The clinics not only show you the basics and offer training suggestions, but they're going to give you a chance to connect with other newbies and maybe make plans to train with them. So that's cool. That's definitely a very cool thing. Get a bike fit. or at least read up on how your bike should fit. It's hard to race when your knees come up to your shoulders when you pedal, and it's amazing the amount of power you can get when you put when your bike is properly fit to you and compared to when it isn't. So you definitely want your bike to fit right. I tend to run my cross bike saddle a hair lower than I do my road bike saddle, just because I want an ever so slightly lower center of gravity, keeping my weight down just a little bit, and also it helps for emergency exits, I'll call it that. And that's kind of a thing that you can pay attention to. And I'm not talking about a lot. I'm talking about I drop my saddle maybe 2 millimeters. It's not a whole heck of a lot. But there are some things that you you might want to pay attention to as far as a bike fit goes. Use what you have. Do you have a mountain bike? Do you have a road bike? Do you have a hybrid? The beauty of Cross is it's made for a combination of bikes. So whatever you've got, the odds are good you can use it to get your feet wet before you commit to a new bike. So anyway, that's another thing. I see a lot of people starting with mountain bikes. They'll come out with a mountain bike, and they'll do a few races on the mountain bike because you can do the beginner's races with them or the training races with them. And then usually within a couple of weeks of racing, they go, you know what, I think I need to do something about this. And they'll find themselves a cross bike. The other beauty of it, too, is it's quite a little network of people. And oftentimes you will find a racer who is getting rid of their pit bike. And if you don't know what a pit bike is, well, the pit bike is the second bike that you have when you're racing and you need to grab a new bike because you're having a mechanical situation on your other bike and you're able to pick it up in the pit. And that's why they call them pit bikes. A lot of people will take their old race bike, turn it into a pit bike, and if they get a new race bike, then they have to get rid of their old pit bike. So you can usually find some pretty good bargains out there, too, if you do that. So anyway, you can also you can do a lot of modifications in different things, but you know, the cross bike is pretty specific. It is something that you are going to ride off road. So I don't recommend that you would take your old crit bike and try to make it into a cross bike, because that's just going to turn into a disaster. You're going to find a lot of time that you're going to be looking at the sky and not at the trail in front of you. So don't do that. But if you can, you can convert other bicycles and make them into cross bikes if need be. So, and now, practice. Says here, find a local cross practice by joining local clubs or checking online. If there isn't one around, get some makeshift barriers in your backyard or local park. Find a hill to practice run-ups. Get practicing techniques and skills. So, I had our young friend George approach me about drills on his bike and what he should do to practice for cyclocross. And so I gave him the nasty one that we do out at Mansfield Hollow, where I sent so many people to over so many years. And that was the one where you basically, there are flotation logs out at our local park because it's a reservoir flood control property. And you ride up to the flood control log, and they're all chained together. And think of them like a giant, like snake going down the hill. And they're all chained together. And what you do is you cross the first one, you ride up to it really fast, you dismount your bicycle, you hop off the bike, and you jump over the barrier, and then you turn around, do a U-turn, turn around, and then ride to the next pole, they're like telephone pole size, and you do the same thing. And you go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth until you get down to the bottom of the hill. You get to the bottom of the hill, you shoulder the bike, and you run all the way back up to the top of the hill. I think the record, and here's a little challenge for anybody who wants to try to pull this off. The record, if you're living around this area and are local, is 5 times before you will literally fall on your face and never want to do this again. But boy, do you get a lot of skills, because it's practice, practice, practice. It's the same thing, repetition, repetition, one after another, and you really, really, it helps really streamline your practice and your technique. So you want to learn the basics. You want to learn about barriers, dismounts and remounts, shouldering the bike, riding through mud or sand, all these different things. I have done anywhere from setting up my own little course that is in the backyard of my house that I can play around with to actually just going out. Years ago, I used to just go out and I used to ride on the power lines with my cross bike. Anywhere that a motorcycle can go, I can go on my cross bike. And I know that's probably a little extreme, but if you can do that on your cross bike, you can pretty much do anything on your cross bike. So I also was really, really big about getting out and riding with my mountain bike friends, which didn't always settle really well with them because sometimes they get a little angry with me because I would be able to keep up and I had the little skinny bike, the skinny tire bike, and they get a little upset because they got these really fancy mountain bicycles. But, you know, it was also a way to really push the pace on you and get you to really work hard and hone your skills, too. The other thing, ride a mountain bike. Mountain bikes are great for training for cross. They're a wonderful way to hone in your skills and get better and more confident on the bike. It does change dramatically when you go to narrow tires, let me tell you. It's not the same as riding on the mountain bike. The mountain bike has far more forgiveness than the cross bike does. So you can kind of make mistakes on the mountain bike that you can't make on the
cross bike. I would
like
to make some mistakes on a mountain bike.
Yeah.
Since my experience at the adventure ride. Yeah.
We're going to have to talk about that in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. We'll try to do. Yeah, because you're not feeling so.
I don't have skills. Yeah.
Yeah. So
mind gravel that I can do. I mind gravel that I can't do.
Yeah.
I don't like to do stuff I can't do unless I can learn how to do it. But if I can't learn how to do it, you know, because the thing is, when you mess up when you can't do it with this stuff, you could get really hurt.
Oh, yeah. You can.
And I want to ride my bike tomorrow.
Right. And we all do. And occasionally you have one of those things that happens. And I know many riders who have had their season cut short. But, you know. I don't want to have my season cut short. It's part of the, you know, it's part of it. If you really want to race, though, it's a thing. So anyway, this comes, of course, from Cyclocross Magazine. So they say on their number 6 on their list, it says read Cyclocross Magazine in print and on the website. You can join conversations. There's forums. There's all sorts of things. There's how to's. I'm going to add something onto this, not to take away from Cyclocross Magazine, because I like these guys a lot. Go to YouTube and watch some videos, watch some cross races, and watch how the pros do it. I've been a really, really, really big advocate of watching how pros, A, set up their bicycles, what they look like on their bicycles, where their weight is, how they balance themselves out. Check it out. See how the pros do it. You know how to ride your bike, but you have no clue on how to ride your bike. Watch the pros. The pros get paid to do this. They have a much better idea of it. They've had a lot more practice at it. They've done it for many, many years. So watch a pro ride their bike, ride cyclocross. And then watch the amateur videos, too, because you'll see all the things to do wrong. And those are always a lot of fun. I placed a video from Nationals many years ago on YouTube that was this giant mud slide down the side of the
field. Do you know your video is on?
Is it still there?
I don't know what this is, like the Grand Fondo National Series presented by Ho Root that's going to be in Maryland on September 22nd.
Yeah.
Your video is posted on that website.
No way.
It's listed as video, mudslide madness at U.S. Cyclocross Nationals.
Really? No kidding.
Yeah. I can't look at it
If you could grab that by any chance and share it over to the Bicycle Talk page, that would be kind of cool. I haven't seen it for a long time. I mean, I have it. I think I have it in my files somewhere. But, yeah, throw that up there because that was a hoot.
Was that 2017?
I believe it was. Okay. It was the one that was in Hartford. And the interesting thing was that there was the ground was frozen and we got some warm weather and we got some rain, and the rain basically hit the dirt and made the dirt turn into mud on the hillside. But underneath the mud, there was permafrost. So there was a sheet of ice underneath the mud, and I watched Adam Meyerson come around the first lap, and he nailed it. He didn't get off his bike. He just dropped down there like a pro, because he is a pro. And he, although he's not maintaining his pro status at this time that I know of. But anyway, Adam dropped down there like it was nobody's business. He had two other guys do the same thing right behind him, although the last one was a little sketchy. And then everybody else did the slide for life. And it was a good fun time. But watch those videos. Watch what people do right and what people do wrong, and you will learn from that. And then it's a matter of trial and error. You got to get out there and do it. But the best way, if you really want to get good at cyclocross, is to race cyclocross. So you kind of got to get out there and, you know, suck it up and get yourself a number, slap it on your back, and go for a race. Because you'll learn a lot, and you'll learn so much so quickly, because it just comes at you. And don't be frustrated in your first season or two or three. Please don't be frustrated. It comes after time. My friend Dave Geisert, he told me it's finally starting to click. He's clicking really well for him, actually. He's very, very good at it. But he used to thumb his nose at me with cross because he thought it was weird. Anyway, now he's like a serious competitor. So shout out to Dave. But the last thing on their list is have fun. Have fun. That's what it's all about. You're supposed to be having fun. That's the idea. If you're looking for things to do, there's cyclocross training for beginners. There's all sorts of drills you can do. I am a big, big believer in standing starts, and I would do them before my workout, and I would do them after my workout. So standing starts are basically you're starting from the very beginning. You have one foot clipped in, one foot out, and you jump on it and do what the motorcycles call a hole shot, and you just nail it as fast and hard as you can. Just sprint it up as fast as you can, because that's the way these races start. And when you start practicing those both before your workout and after your workout, I say after because you're going to be really tired then, and it's a great time to push the limits. But even if it just 6 by 1 minute standing starts with a full recovery in between, they make a huge difference. They will help you get into the race earlier and not get caught into the big crowds that you can run into. So there's a lot of things there. I'm going to have to scoot aside here because we're kind of running out of time, and I'll talk about some more cyclocross training for beginners, key learning points, on the next episode of Bicycle Talk. And we can look at that and think about maybe putting together some sort of a training plan and see what you can come up with for cross, because it is a fun time. It is truly... I'm going to call it the ugly stepchild of the of cycling, because it isn't pretty, but it sure is fun, and it'll put a smile on your face. I guarantee it will. So we're going to move on from that, and I'm going to work my way into the calendar section. A couple of things I wanted to mention before I got there. One is that there has been a delay on the Chinese tariffs. So Trump has put a delay on Chinese tariff increases, and they were set to increase from 25% to 30% on October 1st. And on Wednesday, President Trump said the increase will be delayed to October 15th. So what does it mean? It means that a lot of these things are related towards bicycles. Many bike products are involved in the tariffs on the Chinese goods. So you might want to rush down to your local bike shop and take a look and see what you might want here real soon. And, try to avoid that from happening to you. One other little thing I wanted to mention is Eurobike, which is the big bike show over in Europe, has a 6.6% increase over last year. So that's kind of cool. That means that there's obviously a very strong interest, and it's a good thing. We're getting interest back into the industry again. That's always a special and good thing. So, moving on. So the Rocky Hill Cyclocross Series continues tonight over in Rocky Hill at the, if you're looking for it, just Google up the dog park in Rocky Hill, and it'll bring you right to the park that it occurs at. You need to know more about any of this or any races coming up, including Mansfield Hollow, which is coming up very soon. You can find out more about them on bikereg.com. And everything will be on the calendar. Other things that are happening, Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross is Newtown Cyclocross is this weekend. That'll be the first of the Connecticut series that's happening. And again, you can find that on bikereg.com. And then shortly after that, in the Connecticut series, you will see Mansfield Hollow on October 12th. In between that, there will be Gloucester is in there. Gloucester is the big boy. It's the biggest cyclocross race in New England, one of the bigger ones in the country. And that is, I believe, the weekend before Mansfield Hollow. So if you're looking to see a really, really big event, that would be a fun thing to do. Anyway, that's it. We're pretty much done and covered everything. My name is Pedalin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS. Stores.